Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFI members and by the Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, producers of locally crafted ales and beer since 1981. The Sierra Nevada Brewing Company also offers fine dining at their tap room and restaurant at 1075 East 20th Street in Chico. More information at sierranevada.com.
Hi, you're listening to KZFR, and we are talking today about chivalry and feminism on Love in the 21st Century. Today, we're here with Jonah Richman and Beth Petta, and of course...
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, they're guiding a cuddle workshop, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. But in the meantime, we want to dive into a topic we were kind of all discussing just a couple days ago about what the preferences are among women in this day and age with chivalry. A few of the gentlemen here today have experienced women that find chivalry offensive, and a few of the ladies here today appreciate chivalry. And so we found that this might be a good time to, you know, talk about these things. Maybe I just want to hear, first off, like, what are your personal perspectives on chivalry, everyone around the room? And I kind of want to start with Tammy, actually.
Okay. My personal perspective of what chivalry is?
No, do you like it?
Oh, do I like it?
Yeah. How much chivalry do you like? Or is it offensive to you? Or where do you stand on this scale?
I think it's etiquette. I think of it as being polite. And I think that it depends. I mean, like, when we were just in the... weight room over here, and Jonah got up so politely for you, Emily. I thought that was a little bit over the top, personally. To give you a seat. But I think it's really polite. I think that chivalry, opening doors for people, I think that is something that is lost in our culture. And I don't think that particularly applies to men. I think that women can do that as well for other people. So... it's really interesting to talk about when we say, like, what's chivalrous. That's what I wanted, you know, what I thought we should start. What are we talking about when we are talking about chivalry? Like, what are we expecting from certain people? And for me, I guess I think that people should have manners and should treat people politely. And if they feel the urge to get up, then they should. I mean, if they feel that it's a polite thing to open a door for somebody, then do it. But I don't think that we should expect people to behave a certain way.
What about stuff like, you know, paying for the first date? Things like that. Stuff that's more than just holding open a door.
Paying for the first date. I think it's polite, but I didn't expect someone to pay for me. Though my mom's culture, my mother's Costa Rican, and her belief is that if you invite somebody to dinner, you should pay. Mm-hmm. So whoever actually makes the invitation, like whether it's, you know, a woman to a man or vice versa, like my mom invites my friends out to eat, like she always expects to pay for everyone. When... you know, people are always very surprised that she does that. But in her culture, being Costa Rican, like, if you invite somebody, because generally people don't go out to dinner unless they have money to go out to dinner. But you might invite them to come over to your house and cook them dinner.
Right. So invite somebody to dinner when they may not have the money is rude.
And so, exactly. So to answer that question more directly, I guess, if somebody invited me out to dinner and it came time to pay, I would have money to pay. So for my part of the dinner. I wouldn't expect to pay for their part of the dinner.
That all makes sense. And like when we think of chivalry, consideration is totally a part of it. Just being like a considerate person, having manners and things like that. But, you know, I think driving it back to love in the 21st century, when we think about romantic relationships, maybe thinking about like relationships with people you love, you know, when I think about chivalry, you know, the person that I'm dating right now is incredibly chivalrous, like one of the most chivalrous people I've ever been with. And that means, I mean, he brings me flowers all the time. I get foot rubs. You know, he pays for things and he holds doors open.
Quit bragging.
No, well, see, and that's just it. Is like that for some, you know, for you and for me, that would be bragging. That feels great, you know, to us. And then for some other people, that might be like you said, maybe with the chair over the top, you know. So I'm just kind of trying to get a gauge on, you know, in romantic relationships, in loving relationships, like where do you sit with chivalry? Like, what do you expect or desire or want in your romantic relationship?
This is a really direct question.
Did you know you were going to be the guest?
I didn't know I was
going to
be the guest.
I know, right?
joy and happiness. I expect someone to be pleasant to be around. Anything they bring above and beyond that is awesome. but I want somebody with good conversation, somebody that enjoys the same things as I do, mm-hmm. and hopefully enjoys the same kind of food, so we don't have to go to two different restaurants. But I'm willing.
Is there such thing as too much? Do you get to a point where you're like, no, you have done too much in the chivalry department, and I need to stand my ground, and I'm paying for this one kind of thing? Like, is that, does there come a point where there's too much of that politeness?
I think so. I think that there's a point of which you need to be able to rely on yourself. Mm-hmm. And especially why the reasoning behind why mm-hmm. they're doing it. Mm-hmm. Because especially if it's like an expectation, like they feel like that's what you want from them. Or, you know, then it becomes like, oh, well, I'm not as happy in the relationship. And so those things start to disappear. Like, that, like, you know, or if it's just like the courting part of the relationship, I think that there's all these different elements that come into why it's happening. And like, yeah, it's wonderful to get flowers and it's wonderful to get physical affection and attention. But that's normal, I think, in relationships. And especially when you're first dating in relationships, like...
I think, mm-hmm. like, you know, I know that you know the five love languages, and mm-hmm. one of the love languages is, you know, is receiving gifts, right? And receiving gifts doesn't...
I'm not a gift receiver, if that's the...
So I am a gift receiver. Right, right. Yeah. And so for me, the chivalrous behavior is incredibly... it's just right on par with how I like to receive love. Beth, how do you like to receive love?
Oh, well, I was just saying with the five... I was just looking into that and reading about that as well this morning. And it also falls under the category of service, acts of service. And personally, I just discovered... that I speak through that language, the acts of service, not so much the gift giving. I'm not as, you know, that's not quite as important for me, but the acts of service is for sure.
And how about chivalry in relationship? How do you feel about what do you like in your relationships as far as chivalry goes, and where does that come from for you?
I think Tammy made a good point. If politeness and consideration, that just should be equal. That should be both male and female, pretty across the board, the ways that we show our consideration and our care.
There's something that I was reading about recently about how women hope that men anticipate their needs, because as women, we anticipate other people's needs. And, you know, I'm making some sweeping generalizations here, but in general, women have that maternal tendency and, you know, are highly observant and multitaskers and things like that. And there are many men like that as well. But, you know, so we would anticipate each other's needs and reach out to each other if we saw needs in the female community, and if we saw needs not being met. And so with our... presumably male partners, and, you know, of course, I'm not sure how that works when they're not male partners, but we may maybe perhaps more easily in this conversation, but we wish that our men maybe would anticipate our needs more, and when they don't, maybe we feel a little disappointed. So, like, when it comes to... Oh, go ahead.
Could you be a little bit more clear about anticipate our needs? Because
yeah,
I could say that can be easily misstepped.
Yeah.
And being a woman and having female friends as well, is that sometimes our perceived needs of each other are perceived wrong. Mm-hmm. And so my thing is, like, if you want something... be clear.
Right, right.
Be clear.
And that's actually, right, and in these, in what I was reading, you know, I mean, that's a really masculine, like, tendency is to, mm-hmm. or not tendency, but
behavior,
men,
which I think
behavior,
is funny to
right.
think of it as masculine.
Though. Sure. I know, I do too. And I think that this is, like, Julian really dislikes when you categorize things, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus type stuff, because he likes to say that both men and women are from Earth.
We are. And our differences are minuscule compared to our similarities.
But direct.
Yeah, the way, obviously, communication happens, I think the idea that men don't anticipate needs as often as women, I think the more accurate statement might be that men don't anticipate needs well. It's not that we don't, we're just bad guessers. And I think what happens is, you know, when a man loves a woman, he can't keep his mind on nothing else. He's there. He wants to, and maybe he'll do this, maybe he'll do this, and maybe it'll miss often because there's maybe some communication breakdown or something. But I think a man engaged in a relationship is trying to anticipate needs as well.
I think what my point of bringing that up was about communication and directness of communication, and that, you know, that men don't play guessing games very often for themselves. They're just like, if they need something, they say what they need. And women sometimes say what they need and are very clear about it. And sometimes it takes a few minutes to feel out what you need or have a conversation to discover what it is that you need. And so maybe there might not be always that clarity in communicating those needs, because maybe you're still feeling it out. And so, and how that relates to chivalry was, you know, sometimes we have an expectation that on a date somebody will pay or pull out a chair or open a door, and kind of, how about, I'm really curious about the men in the room. How has that perceived expectation affected you in, you know, dating and things?
So for me, I think just listening to you guys all speak, it's clear to me that my experience has mostly just been confusion my whole life. Is seriously, especially in the early part of dating, because a woman isn't going to tell you, oh, I would like for you to pay for this dinner tonight. And in the modern world, it's a little confusing. I'm like, are they going to want me to pay? Do they not want to pay? And I think, like Julian said, I don't have a strong opinion either way. I just want to please. I just want the woman to be happy, and I want us to get along and have a good time. And so I'm playing the guessing game. And I loved that that Tammy brought up the example of just earlier before we started, I offered my chair to Emily. And this concept is on my mind, so I'm thinking about it. And so I was like, okay, this is a good opportunity to do it.
And then
Emily, or Tammy, responded exactly the way that I worry that women do. Like, oh, that's a little over the top. Or right. Like, I think with flowers and stuff, like, I have this fear that if I bring flowers that they might be like, well, that was original. You're pretty romantic. Like, it's, like, there's something about, not knowing how they're going to receive it. And so, I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing that most of the time, most women would be very appreciative of any of those things. But there's a little part of me that's afraid that they don't. And I've definitely heard women talk about, oh, this guy, he did this and he did that, and it was so ridiculous. And so, so it is. Mm-hmm. It's my experience mostly is it's confusing. and you know, hopefully I get lucky.
I think I
made the right choice.
I think there are other factors often in place. So a guy brings a girl flowers. If she doesn't like the guy, oh my God, this guy brought me flowers. If she does like the guy, he brought me flowers. You know, what's that movie, The Breakup? Jennifer Aniston, whatever, Vince Vaughn. She says, you know, he says, you never wanted me to bring you flowers. You said you hated flowers. You said they were a waste of money, and they're better in the ground. And she said, are you kidding me? Every girl likes flowers. I just said that. Mm-hmm. And that's something really telling. Yeah. You know, I think what we're talking about here, obviously, what we're talking about with chivalry, I think, is, you know, male energy to female, and with feminism, about kind of an equality overall. And the thing is, that line is moving. You know, you talk about offering your chair to somebody, and the line is right about there right now socially. Like, do you stand up on a bus, on a train? It's a little bit different in a social setting where people are just sitting around hanging out in the living room. I don't know. It wasn't too long ago that a woman walked into the room and every man stood up.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if you do that now, whoa, dude, are you Amish? You know, and like that doesn't really fly. So the line is moving.
Yeah.
And I think the push, I mean, you know, I think a lot of us are probably burnt out on the stereotypes attached to feminism, when really it's just about equality. Mm-hmm. And so the push for that equality has made it confusing a little bit. But I think as long as everything comes from a place of good intention and honest communication, and so you bring a girl flowers and she doesn't like getting flowers, okay, there are plenty that do.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I think just showing affection and courtesy in the way you feel most comfortable, which may be how old you are, maybe where you grew up. I myself grew up in the Midwest. So stuff like...
So he brought the chivalry with him.
You know, but hopefully I left some of the intolerance behind, you know, to be perfectly honest. So I think, you know, there are so many factors in chivalry, and it looks like we have a phone caller.
Drama. I got daughters.
I don't know.
Can you hear us there, Josh?
Hello.
I don't need
trying to be on the air.
Schizophrenic shit.
Whoa, turn it down. Turn it down. And that's what happens when you have call-in people and people talking in the background. Sorry about that,
so,
listeners.
Actually, I kind of wanted to riff off of what you said here. When people used to stand when a woman would walk in a room, when men would used to stand, you know, older men still do stand. Old little men, you know, in rooms, they still stand. And and so it does make, you know, make me want to explore the conversation around generational, like what is shifting, you know, yes, society in this culture is influencing the way that is shifting. Is that, I don't want to use the words good or bad, but, you know, is that a way we want it to shift or not want it to shift, you know, away or towards chivalry?
Well, towards equality, but I we were having this conversation the other night when talking, or the other day when talking about this show topic. In a, you know, the world has suffered under patriarchy for so long. And honestly, if our ancestors had not been jerks about it, it might have been lasted a little bit longer. But it didn't, because of just the oppression, the horrible nature in which women were treated for thousands of years, that supposedly the most progressive country in the world 100 years ago offered half the population the right to vote, just blows my mind that we're in that place.
It's interesting you say that, though, because I've heard... I know a woman pretty closely who's actually argued the opposite of that. That chivalry is actually a continuation of patriarchy. That it comes out of patriarchy, mm-hmm. and that's part of the argument that I've heard mm-hmm. that chivalry needs to go away mm-hmm. is because we're trying to get more to an equal thing. At least chivalry in the sense that it's just from the man to the woman
right.
direction.
And that's
so
what
we
I
have
mean.
We have a caller on the line. Can you hear us, caller?
Yes.
Can you let us know who you are and where you're calling from?
My name is Russ Bush. I'm here in Paradise, and I just wanted to comment.
Awesome. Go
How
ahead.
Come you never hear a woman say these words? Stop bringing me those stupid flowers you always buy me. You never hear that.
You never hear that.
You never hear that.
Nah.
Yeah, why is that?
Because they like it?
Because they're pretty and they smell it.
You're doing something right, I suppose.
Yeah, it sounds like you're on it with the chivalry.
I open doors for all kinds of people, but, you know, it doesn't have to be male or female.
Right.
It's just like older people, whatever. You just pay your respects to your elders and respect women in general.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
You never hear women, stop bringing me those stupid flowers. You never hear that. Why?
No.
do you feel like do you ever feel frustrated by seeing when people younger generations don't open doors or don't hold that respect for the elders?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
No. When I'm going for the Safeways, you know, automatic opening doors, and somebody will speed up their gate to cut me off, it's always the younger person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's you know, I was taught to respect my elders, and I have patience, and I have time.
I think youth.
No, please go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I think youth has been disrespectful since the beginning of time. I don't know if that's necessarily anything new, but people do get older and tend to value those things, those common courtesies throughout the day more and more, and they slow down a little bit.
And they learn wisdom.
Yeah.
Wisdom.
Takes a long time for some of us.
Yeah,
anyway, I just wanted to participate. Thank you.
All right, thanks for calling, Russ.
Bye.
So, so we're talking about chivalry and being a woman of this day and age and being in relationships with expectations around chivalry. Right now we're discussing whether it's generational particularly mm-hmm. or maybe obviously probably a combination of mm-hmm. generation and upbringing, where you were raised and how you were raised, perhaps by your community and by your parents. Actually, do you have we have another caller here?
Okay. We sure do.
Yep.
Can you hear us there?
Yeah.
Can you let us know who you are and where you're calling from?
Yeah, my name's Sherry. I'm calling from Chico.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, I just had a comment. I've always been concerned about the way patriarchal societies, me and this guy have had this ongoing thing in the news and review, but how maybe the tendency to devalue women in patriarchal societies, even to this day. I mean, we think the Republican Party is trying to do as far as, you know, on a daily basis.
We're breaking up a little bit, Sherry. Do you have, is this Sherry Q?
Yeah.
Hey, Sherry. Do you have a radio in the background playing?
Here, sorry.
Could you turn that down so we can hear you a little better?
There you are. My concern has for a long time been that it crosses over into how these societies, this patriarchy, views the environment, because the environment has always had this connection with the feminine, and Mother Earth, and it seems to go hand in hand. So as women are devalued, so is the environment. As women are exploited, so is the environment. And I'm just wondering if you guys have. I know I'm kind of going off.
Well, I actually have a question for you, Sherry.
Totally different.
I have a question for you, Sherry. Do you feel like today's world, I mean, maybe more so, and I don't know, it's hard to say, but in general, do you feel as though women are coming up, that modern times are the best of times for women?
Oh, I mean, definitely compared to the 20s, compared to what the suffragettes and
the 1600s,
all these horror stories that I've read, definitely, but it still seems... that we have a problem with devaluing women in the workplace. We have stereotyped women into, or like pigeonholed women into these positions of nurturing, which we tend to be, good at. But and also, I mean, look what's happening around the world. Mm-hmm. I can't remember that exact quote, but if one person is suffering, then we all are. If one person is being, denied their freedoms, then there's a problem. And I think about women in Afghanistan, and I think about women in India, and how their situations are appalling and continue to be. And I really wish in America, just the way a certain faction of our population tends to, the more conservative faction tends to treat women and view women, and even women play into it, because as somebody said, for thousands of years, patriarchy has been in place, and we have been conditioned. Women have been conditioned into these roles, and we fit right in. Like just what the article, and I might be talking a lot.
Yeah. So, Sherry, do you feel like chivalry continues to stick women in these roles, or do you feel like when men...
No, I think it's wonderful. I think it's showing... Why not? Show the person that you love and bring your husband a bouquet of flowers and some chocolates. I think it should go both ways. I don't think chivalry is necessarily a bad part of patriarchy. I think it's actually something that came out of maybe realizing that women have gotten the short end and have had to suffer under this. And so maybe I think it's actually a good thing that's occurred from that. But I'm just still seeing women, like just last week or a couple of weeks ago in the News and Review, the Bros article, right? How they were, that was really enlightening, how they were talking about how these men, these boys, still tend to, I can't call them men because they're kind of boys, still tend to devalue women and to treat them as sex objects. And how many women can you lay this week? Or, just some of what the article said, and how they feel entitled. That's the big issue, is that men have been conditioned to feel this sense of entitlement because we've lived in patriarchal societies for...
So we have another caller, Sherry, but thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah.
Thank you,
have
Sherry.
A great one. Bye.
We're transferring over to our other caller here, and I'm just wondering, I wonder with those bros and whatnot is, maybe one of the differences between these acts being, let's say, pulling out a chair for a lady.
Are you there?
Oh.
Yeah, I'm here.
Awesome. Can you announce yourself and let us know where you're calling from?
Sure. This is James from Chico. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hi, James. Is my mic working?
I think so. Yeah,
hi, James. I don't hear me anymore, but that's okay.
I can hear you.
Oh,
loud and
great.
Clear on that.
Awesome.
Listen.
We can hear you. Wonderful. Yeah. Hey, James, what's up?
I'm calling because I was hoping to help out with a little terminology problem that you guys are having that you guys probably don't realize that you're having. And
fabulous.
I actually am something of a chivalry consultant or a chivalry expert,
awesome.
You might say, at least for the Chico area. And so I wanted to help out if there's time for that.
That's beautiful.
Awesome.
Clear up our languaging here.
Sure. So what you guys seem to be doing a lot of talking about, which I think is awesome, is you're talking about courtesy between people, especially male to female kind of stereotype courtesy. And that's a really awesome thing. And you guys talked about it a little bit earlier, and that's really cool. But that's only really one aspect of what is really meant by the word chivalry. That chivalry is actually, that term was born in about like the 12th century, term comes from knighthood and horsemanship, and one of the purposes of the world coming up with this concept of having a set of rules for young knights to follow, because basically if you take a whole bunch of older teenage men and men in their 20s and you give them all the latest military hardware and then cut them loose without a lot of rules, then really awful stuff happens, as I'm sure is not too tough to envision. And so giving them some social rules to abide by was a way to kind of help them understand how to be good human beings and to, quite frankly, keep everybody else sort of safe. So chivalry is a set of values which includes courtesy, but also includes things like honesty and prowess, which is their word for just whatever you are good at, continue and to improve at it and keep doing it. And things like piety and fidelity and other stuff like that. So, you know,
I feel like that's something Sherry was saying was, you know, as that chivalry is kind of the good thing that came out of, you know, patriarchy and oppression of women and things like that.
Yeah, it definitely is viewed by a lot of people as a good, you know, it's got its problems, for sure. But
what are those?
I'm sorry?
What are those? Chivalry has its problems? Tell me about chivalry.
Well, chivalry, when it was come up with, it was a way for the privileged class to kind of enforce its own authority while at the same time reining in its, you know, more violent and you know, really loose with the law kind of folks within it.
Sneaky.
Without getting too deep into it, it was come up with as a way, like, look, this is the way we're all going to behave as knights, and we're kind of the boss men of this whole universe that we live in. But we've got to stop guys from doing things like being thieves. We've got to stop them from lying all the time. We've got to stop them from being jerks to women. And that, you know, that all stuff that makes us look bad. And there's actually one of the chivalric virtues is franchise, which is don't make knighthood look bad. Which seems like kind of a weird virtue. But, you know, there's a lot of people, even today, you look at commentary on the internet about celebrities, half the time what we're talking about is stop making other people of that category look bad. Mm-hmm. You know, we're mad at police officers because there's a certain small group of police officers making cops look bad. There's a certain group of people of a particular ethnic minority, or they're poor people, or they're rich people, or some other category. And what we're mad about is stop making our category look bad. In the Middle Ages, it was the same thing. Look, you jerks who are going out there and you're setting fire to towns because some girl told you no, or you're robbing people of their money just because you can, because you're strong and they're weak, you know, knock it off. Quit making us look bad. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, part of what they were after in coming up with this thing called the Code of Chivalry. There's a nonprofit group that has a branch here in Chico. It's the largest group of historical reenactors in the world, called the Society for Creative Anachronism. They recreate the Middle Ages, but we say not as they were, but as they should have been. We end up talking about chivalry and a lot. And so, you know, male to female courtesy is one small part of that, but it's this myriad of things that we all have to kind of be mindful of and try to reinforce.
Yeah, that's really cool. And you know, right before you came on, I was saying that Sherry had brought up the bros, the topic of the bros, and now that you've clarified chivalry, it drives I think maybe what I was going to explore home a little deeper, which is that maybe chivalry, or at least when a man pulls out a chair for you when you're going to sit down, and again we were talking about more men to women, of course, but you know, that where that act is coming from within the person makes a big difference. I'm using that word bros because of the article, if like the bros from that article, you know, are being trained to do these things, but otherwise they're totally, you know, the acts that they're performing are not in alignment with their morals or their virtues, then it is sort of an empty behavior only to maybe get laid or something like that, right? So it's like,
no, I'm sure you're right, and there's always a problem with transmitting morality and virtues, that if you teach only the behavior and you don't teach the context, then sometimes you end up with empty behavior that doesn't reinforce someone living a better life. You know, a lot of those male to female courtesies that we're used to from being trained by our parents or grandparents really is a way to remind the privileged that you need to keep your mind on your privilege and check it.
One thing I've kind of noticed about the way you describe chivalry is when it came into being, it wasn't so much let's be nice now. It seems like when it came into being, the 1200s, oh man, there was a lot of bad stuff going on back then. Any history experts can look back and know that things were happening in humanity that you wouldn't be proud of. And so like you said, the lying, the being rude, the misogyny. I think there needs to be a difference or an understanding that it seems to be that chivalry is not just not lying, not being rude, and not being a misogynist, but being honest, being courteous and respectful, and, you know, being more feminist, equality driven. So it's not just not being those bad things. It's not being those bad things and trying to compensate for a history and a culture of those bad things. What I was trying to say earlier about the line of what is socially appropriate when it comes to chivalrous behavior changing is, you know, I like to buy dinner when I take a girl out. I like to. It makes me feel good. It generally makes them feel good. Everybody feels good. And I don't look at it as, well, she should have to pay half, because we're living in a society where she doesn't make as much as I do, where I have other opportunities that she doesn't, where it's kind of a reparations of sorts, you know? And so I don't, it's not like guilt money or anything, but it comes with an understanding that, you know, it might be more challenging. It is more challenging for a woman in today's world than it is for a man.
What if the woman does make more than you?
Well, then awesome. Then we're getting dessert.
You're still gonna pay.
And we're getting dessert.
But are you paying? Yeah. Who's paying that?
Well, I think it depends on the range, and you know, I
hate to always be the negative one on chivalry, but I have seen examples of men who actually go in debt because they think it's so important that they're always paying for dinners and they're always paying for the meals, and then it can result in a problem in the relationship. So I think it's important to acknowledge that there's something of value to really being able to really support another person, or to, if you have more, to share what you have.
Right, it shouldn't come from just a place of trying to impress.
But that the concept of chivalry and I'm supposed to do this thing, I think can sometimes lead men to almost causing harm to themselves. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, they're not going to be able to take care of the woman anyway because they're going into debt by their behavior.
So. Well, let me interrupt here for another second, because we've got another terminology problem, which I'm glad came up. One of the chivalric virtues that's included in all of the lists from back then is the virtue of largesse, which is not really a word we use very much nowadays. And what it really meant is generosity, a specific knightly kind of generosity. And the concept of the man paying for the meal at a date really came out of that knightly largesse tradition. And largesse was considered fraudulent if you pledged money that you didn't have for any reason. There were people who talked about this. So when I hear you talking about guys going into debt and stuff like that, that totally makes sense that, yeah, some guys are not going to think it through and do dumb things, but, you know, trying to stop some guys from doing dumb things is, like, really hard. And
I've always said the world is full of dummies, and that makes it easier on the rest of us.
Right, probably.
To succeed.
So the only point I'm trying to make is that largesse is about sharing what you have. And make sure that you're not being, you don't spend your life being stingy. When you have people who work for you, you should be generous with your resources. When you have people that you want to be in any kind of relationship with, it's important to be mindful that you, it's good for your own soul and it's good for the world if you are generous with what you have. And that those last few words are as critical as the first two. Does that make sense?
James, have you ever been with a woman who has been offended by your generosity?
I would love to tell you that I have a great story about that, but I am fortunate enough that I have been married for, you know, more than 25 years, and my wife was never offended by generosity, mainly partly because I was so broke when we dated, it was really hard to be generous with anything but my time, but try to remember that being generous with your money is only part of the story. Being
right.
generous with your time and your labor, your effort and your heart's sincerity
and attention.
That's part of largesse too.
Yeah.
Paying notice, you know, my grandpa told me one thing that I didn't get till I was in my 40s. He said, always notice children. And I'm like, Grandpa, what are you talking about? Like, you know, they're little kids. You can't help but notice them because half the time they're running you over. But I didn't understand that for an older man like him, it was always take the time, you know, get down on your knees and look at them and speak words to them. They don't care about your money. They don't understand that, but they understand time. They understand, you know, effort into a relationship, someone a great deal younger or a great deal older or in some other kind of social distance from you. That's another way to be generous that doesn't require you to open your wallet, but it's still really hard for us guys sometimes to do.
Well, the person that I'm seeing, like I said, brings me flowers and foot rubs, and gives me foot rubs, and both of those he doesn't spend money on because he picks the flowers and, you know, and spends the time with the foot rubs. So, yeah, you can definitely still be chivalrous and amazing and not be opening your wallet.
Yeah, and that's important for us always to remind each other and anybody, because everyone is teaching all the time, whether you mean to or not. So just be careful what you do. It's as good a reason as any to be mindful of what the heck you're up to all the time.
Yeah, you know, what's funny is the person that I'm dating, often when we're when he behaves these ways around other men are like, dude, you got to stop. You're making me look bad. You know? So talk about setting examples.
And that is the most wonderful opportunity. It's one of the very few times that I actually approve of being snotty to other people is when they're giving you a hard time for doing something that you believe is obedient to a virtue, some way that you're trying to be obedient to the way you want to live. And that's the perfect example of, you know, I encourage anyone, you know, push back when that you gain any kind of mockery for doing something that you think is generous. It's much better to be taken advantage of once in a while than to be ungenerous all the time.
We're talking about these things.
And nothing you put into your present relationship, I would consider that's never a wasted effort.
I think that we're talking about these things and you know, being specific to relationships, but really when we're talking about these virtuous behaviors, these are things that we should be considering that we are wanting every person, man or woman, to adopt into their life. As you said, your grandfather mentioned, notice children. You know, be aware of what's going on with other people outside of you in your life. And when the woman that had called earlier and her mention about bros, it's like our society is creating these things. And so when we as individuals are maybe judgmental or questioning of their behavior, of their lack of meeting our own personal expectations, where did those expectations grow from? Who were you raised by? And a lot of people were raised by the modern society. So if we really want to see these things curved, instead of criticizing or judging, which nobody likes, you know, nobody likes that, nobody likes to judge, but rather encouraging and stating what you want, being in your personal power. That's what we should be encouraging everybody to do, is be in your personal power, know what you want, speak from your heart, and do what feels good. You know, like, sometimes it feels good to bring somebody flowers, sometimes it doesn't. It really all just depends.
Yeah, I would make an offering that when I became a knight, which I am a real knight, I don't play one on TV, and we can talk more about that another time if you want. But I was always, I was encouraged by a mentor to remember that a knight is always the person that is expected to bridge gaps between other people, between rich people and poor people, between men and women, between the powerless and the powerful. And you have to be mindful of everybody within those relationships. And I think the metaphor is really useful for us in the 21st century. Say, you know, look, other people matter. We are, as a culture, we tell ourselves on a regular basis that don't care about what other people think. Be as independent as possible. Don't need other people. Don't pay attention to other people. And unfortunately, I think we're getting kind of emotionally, spiritually sterile because of that.
You know, I once heard a friend of mine tell me that the world began overpopulation. Overpopulation started happening when strangers started happening. When you'd be in a grocery store and you'd walk past somebody and not say hello because they're a stranger. That when we got to the point where the population was so big that people had to disconnect, because you can't stop and have a conversation with everybody like you used to be able to do. I think, you know, a lot of this conversation has been about, you know, defining chivalry and a little bit about defining feminism and mostly about what's appropriate in today's world, since the show is called Love in the 21st Century. But I think the overall thing is that what's appropriate is what feels right. You know, how you enjoy giving affection, attention, courtesy, how that feels right to you. You know, link up with somebody who receives it well in that way. Like, you know, we've talked about the love languages. On the list of things, I took the love languages quiz on air here, a year ago or something like that. And as I recall, the top of the list I thought would be affection, but it wasn't. For me, it was project-oriented. Like, somebody working with me on something, I feel love from them most like that. And the person I'm dating right now... is heavily project oriented with me. Is heavily project oriented with me.
There's a difficulty in using the expression "do what feels right." I would offer is as a pushback expression: do what makes you feel proud of yourself. Mm. Because you can do what feels right and do awful stuff.
Well, I believe I was referring to feels right on a deeper level rather than for a second or two. But you know. But like I was saying, you know, if you enjoy chivalry, like, obviously you are drawn personally to knighthood and chivalry and things of that nature and that code of ethics, you know, and it sounds as though you have paired up with somebody who receives that type of courtesy well and likes that. So yeah. I think, you know, so let's say there's some random guy listening right now and he's about to go on a first date tonight and he doesn't know if he should pay for it. Sit down and don't, throughout the dinner, don't ask yourself, should I not? It's not about social norm. It's not about what society expects. It's what the person across from you is interested in and how much you're interested. And so tune into what they want and what would make them feel special and treated.
And how much money you already have in your wallet.
And how much money you already have in your wallet.
I actually would say tune into what you want, because when you align with a person who receives how you want to give, then that's probably the best. If you feel like splitting the check is what makes you feel most comfortable, then do that and see how they react. And if they're offended by it or whatnot, then that's probably not the right person for you. And vice versa.
Well, I'm implying you really like the person you're sitting across from and you just want to make them happy.
I think
Emily's making a great point, though, because sometimes you might be, especially when you're nervous, it's hard to be intuitive. And to intuit something like whether or not they want you to pay the check is not easy to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. There might be some tricks to it. But but that's a question that was probably going to remain a mystery until you go ahead and do it. And I like Emily's suggestion of just checking in with yourself and go, well, what makes sense to me? And so if this person really gets upset by whatever choice I make, and they probably won't. If you guys are getting along, it's not going to be a break it deal either choice, but whatever feels right to you, and then you're testing the person, and then you get to see, well, how are they going to respond? And maybe they'll love it. Maybe you made the wrong choice, but you
and
can move on.
And you're also setting the bar of starting off with authenticity.
Absolutely. Yeah, and maybe you're not setting expectations. Like, maybe you don't feel comfortable being the one paying every time as a man, and yet you spend the first, you know, month together paying every time because you're trying to impress. And then, you know, a couple months into it, you're like, gosh darn it, why am I paying every time? And the woman's like, oh, I'm so glad he pays every time. And then you ask, and then she's like, oh, wait, now I have to help foot the bill? You know, and just sets an expectation in motion that maybe you can't have through the, you know, longevity of the relationship.
Longevity, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, so I'm going to ask you younger folks to slow down for just a second. I'm going to ask you why there's all this guesswork you guys seem to be describing. One of the ways to practice largesse is to be generous with your feelings and your thoughts with the other person. I'm wondering why you don't, at the beginning of any first date, be like, okay, so I was raised to that guy should pay every time, but I really want to know, and I'm feeling comfortable with that, but I really want to know what you think, person across the table from me.
I think you're making some assumptions here about us here in the radio station, too, because actually we are very open. Every single person in this room right here is actually very open with their communication with each other and with the people around them. And right now we are conversing in a way that I think the public maybe hopefully, you know, resonates with when they're sitting down on a first date and they're wondering these things, right?
Well, I'm talking to all those young people listening as much as anything. But yeah, I appreciate being corrected about that, because I'm so happy that you guys are discussing all of this stuff in a really respectful way.
Your
really awesome.
Contribution has been very, very helpful. Thank you for defining chivalry with us.
Yeah, and I want to thank you, because I loved that example you just gave of just putting it on the table. I think that's great.
Yeah, and
next time, if I'm in that position again, that's my plan.
Oh, just be super authentic and open and honest.
Yeah.
Start with authenticity.
Yeah, that's definitely what it is.
So, James, thank you so much for joining our conversation. Could you give us a way for people to contact you if they are interested in learning more about what you're involved with?
I'll do better than that. Tomorrow night is going to be a chivalric tournament called the Tournament of the Grail. It's going to be held at the address is 2508 Tom Polk Avenue, which is right near the junction of East Avenue and Highway 99. You can find it on Google Maps. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, we'll be doing a chivalric tournament. You can also go to westkingdom.org, which is a great website for doing medieval reenactment in Northern California, including info about stuff you can do in the Chico area.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, James.
Thank you,
James.
No problem.
You guys have a great time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I feel like that's actually a really awesome segue into talking about some of the cuddle workshop that's coming up for you, for Jonah and Beth here. You know, how people's morals and virtues and consideration plays out in a more snuggly type environment. Would you like to talk a little bit about what you have coming up and perhaps, you know, how these conversations interact? I can see you two debating on who's actually going to be talking first. I'd like to hear from one of you, though. Okay.
trying to let the lady go first. I'm trying to think of how this fits in exactly.
June 6th.
So,
and you can find more information at speakingcompassion.com.
So yeah, we're going to be offering a cuddle workshop. It's something that I've done a few of them. I've been developing them, and then Beth is now joining me and leading them, and we have been working together on making some new ideas. And I'm trying to think of how exactly it fits into chivalry, but it focuses a lot on authenticity
and consent.
And consent, communication, asking for what you want.
Right.
It's encouraging, the workshop's encouraging everyone to develop these skills, so it's definitely not just the men need to ask for what they want or there's any submissive or more dominant role. It's very neutral, and it's skills for everyone. And then it's a lot about really checking in with ourselves and what we want, like what we just spoke about, and being able to know what that is and articulate that, and to play with that in an environment where everyone's come together to potentially snuggle and give massages
and practice what they're just learning and yeah. Practice their boundaries and their yeses, their noes, and really being authentic with themselves and others.
And this is not necessarily romantic color work.
No, yeah, this is a platonic event for platonic physical affection. And so that's another kind of theme we're wanting to bring, is that physical affection doesn't always have to be associated with sexuality. If I could say that. I don't know if I could say that. But and so we are just bringing an environment where people can play with that and explore that and to discover, or people that already know they love it, just the sweeter side of physical human touch.
And can people come alone, or do they need to come with others?
People can come alone. You could come with your partner. You could come with a friend. Any variation. And we're open to all gender orientations, any race, any... We're open to everyone.
So we only have a couple more minutes left on the show, and we do have a few more callers that are calling in. So can we let people know when the date is exactly again for that cuddle workshop and more where they can find more information?
That's this Saturday, actually, June 6th at 7 p.m. And go to speakingcompassion.com for more information.
Fantastic. Caller, are you there?
I did not go.
Well, they're not there anymore. All right, so we got one more after that coming up. So is there anything last things that people want to say wrapping up on the topic, maybe things that are needing to be talked about on future episodes?
Yes, actually, well, I'm not sure about future episodes, but I know that we didn't really get to explore kind of the second part of what I had wanted to explore with how gender roles that instigate behaviors like men pulling out chairs, how those make their way into the bedroom, and how they manifest in the bedroom.
Hello.
But now we have another caller.
Hello, can you announce yourself?
My name's Russ Bush.
Hi, Russ.
You called earlier.
My mom, yeah, I've called several times, but I was just trying to get through. My mom, Lois M. Bush, sued the city of Sunnyvale, California, for sexual discrimination and won a lawsuit for $23,000 because they had her doing her job and two other male men's jobs. And when she quit, they hired some guy and paid him two-thirds above what they were paying her. And she sued him, and she won. And there's, you know, that's the way to go.
Thank you for the story.
Yeah, speak up for your truth. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Emily, were you finished there?
Yes.
Awesome. So thanks for tuning in, folks, for another episode on Love in the 21st Century. And thank you for everyone that called. It was definitely an exciting answering phone session here.
Yeah, thanks to everyone who called. That was really great,
yes,
great topic.
It was good to have all the additional information. And check out the Cuddle Workshop if you are available, Saturday evening, 6 o'clock, speakingcompassion.org.
.com. Big story from that razzle-dazzle place called El Casino Grande, otherwise known as Wall Street. Four massive financial conglomerates, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Barclays, and the Royal Bank of Scotland, have been caught in a criminal conspiracy to rig the global currency market. Bank regulators have now slapped them with an equally massive fine, totaling $5.4 billion. The financial felons coordinated their illegal currency manipulation scheme through online chat rooms with devil-may-care names like the Cartel and the Mafia. The bank's culture of greed led to such a reckless arrogance that one of Barclays' price fixers offered this bit of ethical encouragement to his chat room pals: "If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying." Well, taking a $5 billion hit will put an end to that sort of reprobate banksterism, won't it? No. While this was the first time that banks themselves had to admit that they are corporate criminals, all of them are free to continue doing currency trading, and no top executives were even charged for the crimes they oversaw. And while $5 billion is a huge record-level criminal penalty, it's easily absorbed by these global casino operations. In the first 3 months of this year, for example, J.P. Morgan Chase raked in $4 billion just from its fixed income and currency trading division, about seven times its share of the penalty levied against the four corporate crooks. This is Jim Hightower saying Citigroup CEO called the punishment, quote, an embarrassment to his bank. But banks can't feel embarrassed, nor can they commit crimes. Only bankers can. And, as should be obvious by now, being embarrassed is no deterrent at all to their endlessly creative criminality. If we actually want to stop their crimes, the bankster themselves must feel the punishment. What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Ecotopia, and we'll have an interview with Bill McKibben, the founder of 350.org, who will be speaking here in Chico on Friday evening.
It's not too late.
A boutique and a swinging hot spot.